Hi, everybody. Brian Davis here at Longhorn Confidential. This podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast. And I'm here with Kirk Bowles and Cedric Golden. And guys, we're going to talk about the zany time that we had in Fort Worth. It was a very interesting day. Texas was a loser, though, 37-27 to the TCU Horned Frogs. Texas now 5-3, and the fallout, guys, from this, we'll get into everything that happened in this game, but to me, the big news Sunday, Texas has dropped out of the AP Top 25, going into a bye week, going into November, with four games left. Said, where's this season going?
Straight down the crapshoot, I guess. And, Duck, I haven't read your weekly post on hook'em.com. Did you drop the Longhorns out of your top 25 as well, sir?
I did.
Did you really? Could you give us your reasoning, please, sir?
Well, I dropped them six spots from 15 to 21 after they beat Kansas. And a 21st-ranked team on my ballot, it has three losses, has no business being in the top 25. So that was an easy call.
Preach.
Easy call. That it. And if you just look at the eyeball test, which we are all fond of in this room, they don't look like a top 25 team.
They look like a team. They look like Charlie Strong's defense after those NFL guys, after Quandre and Sed Reed. And
I'm not going to argue
those
with
guys
that.
Left. After they left, that's what they look like. They have become the team that can make stars out of average quarterbacks.
And they did
Carter
that Saturday.
Carter Stanley and Max Dugan, or Duggan, I know how to spell it, don't know if I know how to say it. Over the last two games, Duck, they are 16 of 32 on third downs against a Texas defense coached by one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid, defensive coordinator in all of college football.
Yeah, he's behind Dave Aranda and Brent Venables, but he's top five.
But he's up there. He's top five.
He's top five, clearly.
And I think that he has no answers. When you're looking at third and 17, you want to be a defense that's looking at third and 17, because that's party time. That's when you get off the field and go get some Gatorade. But they're giving up touchdowns.
Yeah, not only do they give up first down, they give up a touchdown. And we're at the back end of that. We're looking behind the play. And, Brian, I don't know about you, but I see Montrell Estell coming over. I go, he's going to intercept this. This is going to be an easy interception. And he takes a bad angle, and it goes over his head. And Pro Wells, which is a great name.
I love that.
Tight end.
I love that name.
Easy catch. Touchdown on third and 17, as you said.
Well, to me, and the reason why I included this clip in my game story said was Jalen Reagor's, was a 44-yard touchdown run where he just literally runs right by DeShaun Jameson, who was peeking in the backfield. I don't understand that. You're lined up against the best, most athletic player that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Their best football player.
Yeah, and I'm sticking with him all the way, right? I'm sticking with him all
and
the way.
And he's running a go. What are you looking at?
Yeah, what is there to look at? Those are the things I don't understand. Let me hit you boys with some stats here. Texas scoring defense, 31.5 points allowed, 8th in the Big 12, if you can believe that. There are teams that are worse. Kansas and West Virginia, believe it or not. But Texas Tech and Kansas also right around there with Texas in terms of giving up the most yardage in the Big 12. Still, the Texas yardage total and the passing total still well on pace to be the worst totals in school history. And said, my question to you is this. I don't think that Tom would even be open to the idea of changing anyone during the season. So fans need to kind of chill on that.
Let that go. It's not happening.
That's not happening. But is Todd Orlando back next year?
At this point, no. If Tom Smarty won't be back.
Why is that?
Unless, and let me put a caveat on that. Unless these other guys who have been hurt come back and play like they were playing before they got hurt. If you haven't noticed, we're running out of season here, guys. They're 5-3. They're only four games left in the regular season. So even if Caden Stearns comes back, he's not in game shape. We know that.
But was it ever a great defense? Ever?
No.
Even
no.
When before they were hurt?
And before the season, I was like, the one thing that scares me the most is the defense. But I wasn't talking about the secondary, Duck.
No.
I was talking about the front six, and I was talking about the pass rush. And it's kind of been a cyclical thing that's brought it all full circle. Remember early in the season when they were giving up big plays, but we're holding them out of the end zone. And we were talking bend and don't break defense.
Not really.
We kind of were earlier. Yeah. Take away that LSU game, and they were bend and don't break. But then those long yard plays became touchdowns, and that's a problem. I think that if they get back healthy and they right the ship in these next five games, Orlando comes back. But if this continues, why would Tom bring him back?
Kirk, here's the issue here as I see it. And tell me what you think about this. Tell me what you think about this theory.
Okay.
Tom has to face a very critical decision. It's not just firing the Texas defensive coordinator. It's the guy that was with him for two solid years in Houston. It's the guy that helped him get the job at Texas. It's the guy that they just extended and gave a big raise to last year. And in Tom's mind, Tom can sit there and say, well, we've had a ton of injuries. Now, fans don't buy that. That's not an excuse, but that is on the table as being a reason for why they're having problems, okay? I think that when it's all said and done, I think that's why it adds up. I think Todd Orlando stays.
Oh, I think he might, you know, and I don't know if that's blind loyalty, you know, to a coach that has been with him.
They're boys.
Through thick and thin.
They are boys.
But it wouldn't be the first head coach that is sunk by keeping assistant coaches too long.
Ask Les Miles about Cam Cameron.
David McWilliams had a beastly time here in 5 years and did not have strong staffs, and it eventually cost him his head coaching job. So, you know, I don't think any of us, the three of us, are fond of mid-season changes. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really does anything. Brian and I were in Fort Worth, said, and I'll just float the idea, unless you wanted to say, Oscar Giles, I'm promoting you to be DC the last four games. Show me what you can do. That would be the only reason to me, is that if you think somebody on your staff can do the job, then I would give them that opportunity right now, because Todd Orlando is 8 games into the third season, and it's been a putrid offense for the better part of 2 years.
Yeah, or if you can get one of those big names you mentioned, a Brent Venables, a Dave Aranda.
They're not coming.
They're not coming, but I said if.
Well, there's not even an if. No. Why would Brent Venables want to come here, leave Clemson? Why would Dave Aranda leave LSU? There's no way.
Money talks.
No, Dave Aranda's making $2.5 million.
What about three? Did you make three?
I'd give him four.
Everybody has a price, Doug. I'm saying if, and the chances of it happening are slim and none. But everybody has a price. People were talking about Nick Saban coming here 8 years ago.
Well, I think he would have come.
And there you go. So we were talking about that. So we're just talking about Dave Aranda. We're just talking about Brent Venables. So I don't know that there's a coach on this staff that could bring the kind of cachet that would make Tom give T.O. the boot. I don't think he's going to give T.O. the boot. I think the T.O. probably will come back, because I think in these next four or five games, they can't play worse than they're playing right now. And I think there are guys that will come back, and they're maybe, just maybe, they'll figure it out here against Tech, which hasn't been a good road team. K-State beat OU, but K-State's coming in here. So those two games are winnable, but if you're asking me if they're going to win at Iowa State or at Baylor right now, I would say no.
Let me ask both of y'all this, because I think that here in the off week, again, Texas is off this week, this is a good time to discuss kind of the crossroads here, two-thirds of the way done and looking towards the future. I would put forward this theory. Tom Herman knew that coaching turnover was one of Charlie Strong's biggest downfalls, right? He knew that the constant turnover, 10 assistant changes in a span of 3 years, ultimately is not good. Okay, so Tom knows that. He knew that coming in, that he doesn't want to change coaches. Okay, but now the question to both of you. Going into year three, and let's say that this season finishes up, you know, 8-4, 9-3, wherever, and they don't make it to the Big 12 championship game.
Ooh, 9-3.
Which is realistic, which is totally real. Again, but mathematically, they can still win out and get to Arlington.
They'd love to be 9-3, BD.
Absolutely. If Tom does not make any changes at this point, Kirk, if he brings back the same 10 guys next year.
After what record?
They did not get finished with the season that they wanted.
And they don't win the Big 12.
Do not win the Big 12.
So let's say 8-4. They won't win them the Big 12.
Yeah, 8-4. Okay. Is that okay? Are the fans okay with that? Is that an admission from Tom that you guys don't know what you're talking about? Is it an admission of, hey, I don't need to change anything because we're doing fine? What does that message say?
Well, it would alienate the fans even more than they're already alienated. And I think they're a livid fan base right now, given the expectations after a 10-win season. We've talked about it a long time on here. I think anytime you have the season they did, including a Big 12 championship appearance and a Sugar Bowl victory, a Big 12 title is maybe the least of the goals. You want to be in the CFP, you know, and we talk about injuries. You know, Alabama, their starting quarterback was out. They got four freshman starters on defense. Both their linebackers, their best linebackers, are out for the year. I don't hear Nick crying about the injuries, and they're still ranked in the top three. Yes, it's Alabama, but Texas kind of acts and talks like, well, we're in the same conversation with Alabama, because Tom has said, you know, our good enough is good enough to beat anybody. Our best is good enough to beat anybody, and that hadn't been the case. So I think he risks really angering the fan base worse. And the last thing I'll leave with that is that, you know, he often quotes the definition of insanity is the same results and expecting something different. So I think it would be a big risk if he did.
Let's also, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, let's not overlook how magical last season was, how things kind of fell into place. The one thing they had last season that they don't this season is they got timely defensive stops and close games. Tulsa, one score game. Baylor throwing into the end zone with 3 seconds left, one score game. Kansas, 6-point game. So those are games that they figured out how to win because they had some guys on defense that could get stops. They don't have those guys now. They have some of those guys. The fact that they just can't get after a quarterback, that's killing them. That's killing them. A good pass rusher, you can, and I'm not saying Ohio State's a bad defense because they aren't. They're really good. They really are a good defense. You take Chase Young off that defensive line, or one of the Bosa guys off that defensive line, then they're not as scared.
Yeah, but you take somebody off their defensive line, they have somebody else the next year just as good.
But Texas doesn't even have one guy.
No,
that
they
can
don't
get to a quarterback. Who's leading them in sacks right now, BD?
I think it's Osai.
Is it Osai with like three sacks?
And boy, he was three. I sure didn't see much from games him on, hold on, let me see, Saturday. And then, well, you look at it, they had,
well, it's, well, okay, just okay, I was right. It is, it's Osai, Juwan Mitchell, and Overshown all had two each going into the TCU game. Then they only had, what was it, Kirk?
Two.
One?
They had two.
That's right. One was,
but they should have had
one
three.
One was by Malcolm Roach. The defensive line said now only has three sacks for the entire season.
That doesn't get it done.
So three, why do you keep the, why do you keep the three men front if it's not working? Does anybody think it's working?
I would switch up. What do you got to lose? You're already giving, you're already the worst defense in school history. Why not go to a 4-3 to get an extra pass rusher on the field? Why not put Osai's hand in the ground and let him
rush the pass? Tom Herman said after the game Saturday, we expect a real run heavy offense to kind of eat the clock and shorten the game. And they did run, but only 162 yards. But Max Duggan hurt them a lot. But I don't know. A four-man front makes sense to me. And I think, I don't know if they're just afraid, Brian, that it's be an admission that they were wrong if they switched fronts. What do you think?
Well, all I know is and I wrote about this, you know, in Monday's paper, this was a defensive staff that felt so confident in their secondary that they were devising a way to get eight DBs on the field at one time.
That's true.
Right? Okay. And the fact is, yes, they've had a lot of injuries in the secondary, okay? But at the same time, the front six, I would say normally say front seven, but the front six in a 3-3-5 base, they've been healthy, okay? They've had the same defensive line starters all season. Osai, Adeyewe, Mitchell.
Graham.
Yeah.
They lost McCullough.
No, they lost McCullough.
But he hadn't played a ton.
He didn't play that much. He wasn't going to play that much because Juwan Mitchell was going to take his playing time anyway.
Right.
Right? So the front six, defensive line, linebackers, you know, they're just there. And said hit on it. We've hit on it every week. You are not going to be a good defense in a passing league if you cannot pressure the quarterback in your base formations. The only way that this team gets any pressure at all is via the blitz. And that puts strain on the back end, which we have, is well documented, has been really, really hurt by injuries.
And they didn't blitz that much against TCU. And when they did, it was delayed and they didn't get there. The one time they really had to have the sack when Malcolm Roach, you know, had Max Duggan in his sights in the end zone, which gives him a safety, points, the ball back, momentum. It was kind of symbolic of that day, you know, how close they could have been. They had a first down at the 6, Cedric, and they threw the ball 3 straight times, didn't trust the run. I thought I was watching the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
You know, from the 1. But they didn't trust the run, did they, Brian?
No, they did not. We didn't see Roschon Johnson in the fourth quarter. I thought he was MIA or he didn't make the trip. He was on the bus, apparently.
But did you sit next to Brennan Eagles?
Oh!
He got like 5 carries all in the fourth quarter. You know.
Yeah. Too little, too late. Well, that to me brings us to the question here as we wind this thing down here on the off week. 4 games left, guys. This thing can go either way. This thing can be a solid finish. It can be a disastrous finish. It can be middle of the road. I don't know. But what happens, Sed, here? First up come the Kansas State Wildcats, which just put a number on Oklahoma. What happens next week at DKR?
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Call me stupid and Duck's looking at me like, are you crazy? I think they win this game. I think they go 2-2 down the stretch. I do. I think they're going to beat K-State, and I think they'll beat Tech here, but I do not trust this team on the road.
Stole the words right out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. They look like a team that I go 2-2.
Absolutely.
Can't win on the road. You know, they got 4 games left. 3 of them are even with them in the conference rankings or ahead of them in Baylor. And they just have not shown they can stop anybody when they have to. It looks like a 2-2, you know, season ending, and that would make them 7-5, which would not be pretty.
Well, all 3 of us are basically already on record through various portions of the year saying if they don't at least get back to Arlington, then that's a failure.
And this just has been that.
Correct.
If they don't make it back.
Absolutely. Okay, so how big of a step backwards for this program is not getting to Arlington?
I think it's huge because it stops your momentum in its tracks. They lost 2 decommit. They had 2 decommitments last week. Another one, Javon Shepherd, an offensive lineman they liked,
quit the team,
is in the transfer portal. So it's like, what's the good news? You know. And the other thing, and I touched on it Saturday in my column for Sunday, they're in the process of wasting the career of one Sam Ellinger, one of the best quarterbacks in school history, and he's been here 3 years. They do not have a Big 12 championship or a CFP berth to show for it. So, you know, that's got to really eat at Tom Herman. So I think I'm not going to say it's devastating, but if they go 7-5, it's a humongous setback.
It's a big setback because they go 7-5. That means Baylor may be in the Big 12 championship. Matt Rhule has ascended to power.
And he's only been there 3 years, same as Sermon.
And he has done miracle work in Waco. So to me, the one thing that sticks in my mind from the preseason is Tom Herman going, we're not running away from expectations.
Thank you.
Remember how loose he was in Dallas?
Oh, yeah.
How happy he was. He thought he had a CFP team, and he doesn't.
He did. He did think that.
He said last spring, it's time to win a championship.
Yes, he did. And so, we've said more than once this year, and I'm not running away from the 10-2. I think, Doug, that we had, and I think BD, you had him in 9-3. We've always thought of them as next year's team.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they're playing now, I don't even know if there's next year. They've got to figure some things out. I think Sam will be back for his senior year with some good receivers, but they got to figure some things out on the other side of the ball, and it may come with him having to make some tough decisions on that staff. I know those are his boys over there.
They always are.
But business is business, and if you're not getting stops, and you're putting all this pressure on Sam, who did not play well Saturday. But if you're putting all this pressure on your marquee quarterback, disaster is not far from happening, and we might be in the middle of it right now, Doug.
But even with the 4 interceptions Sam threw, he threw for 321 yards and 2 touchdowns. Now, he had more incompletions than completions, which is very rare for him. But
I missed some easy ones.
You know what's funny is that we always thought this – season could go haywire if what happened?
If Sam got hurt.
Sam's been healthy throughout, and they're still looking at 5-3, which is very troubling.
Maybe they need to play Sam at defensive end.
Play him both ways? I like it.
He's a football player.
Tough kid.
Well, it's also tough that we've got to zip this thing up, but this podcast has been brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast. For Kirk Bowles, Cedric Golden, and I'm Brian Davis, this has been Longhorn Confidential.